Hey pedestrians, the New York Police Department has just made a rule that seriously violates our basic First Amendment right to peaceably assemble. Now, everyday sidewalk and street uses are illegal. Even if you're not in New York, know that now that this has happened here, it may happen where you live, for the NYPD is the most highly trained and modeled after police force in the country. Here's the finalized rule, which goes into effect February 25th. Groups of 50 or more pedestrians, vehicles, or cyclists must get a permit and approved route from the NYPD or can be arrested for parading without a permit, even if they obey all traffic rules. But the City Council can undo this. So thanks to everybody who called in, and please, to voice your concern, here's the number. City Council Speaker Quinn, 212-788-7210. That's 212-788-7210. More info is at assembleforrightsnyc.org. The police are becoming part of the legislative branch of government. It's up to us to reverse this.
And you're listening to radio station WBAI New York. The time is 7 o'clock straight up. Time once again for Off the Hook.
The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself while shaving, now I can't make a call. We couldn't get much worse, but if they could, they would. Bum dilly bum for the best, expect the worst. I hope that's understood. Bum dilly bum.
Good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Hook. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Wednesday evening. A very special welcome. Joining me tonight, over there on the far side of the room, is Jim.
Hello.
Mike.
Hi.
Wait a minute. Hold on. Say that again, Mike.
Hi.
Okay. And just arriving off the airplane is not Kevin.
Hello.
And where did you just come from, actually?
St. John's.
St. John's in Newfoundland.
No,
St. John's. Oh, St. John's. No, I got it. In New Brunswick.
No.
No. How many St. John's could there possibly be?
One of those two is St. John.
Oh, you're right.
But I forget which.
Okay, but it could be St. John that owns something. So it would be St. John apostrophe S then.
Saints are dead. They can't own anything.
Well, I don't know. They can own our hearts, I suppose.
There could be like a church named after a St. John.
What St. John could? Well, do you think he just came from church? He wouldn't need an airplane for that, would he? Unless he came from
church.
A friend of his that he's very fond of, and he calls him Saint, and he came from St. John's.
It could be a last name.
Could be a last name, too. You're saying the first name could be Saint.
No. I'm saying the last name could be St. John.
Oh, so he's referring to the person by the last name only and not the first
name.
Right,
or it could be a restaurant. It could be a name for a restaurant.
Well, Jim, I suppose we'll never know.
No, we guess not.
Also, wait a minute. Okay, why don't you tell us where you came from?
The Virgin Islands.
The Virgin Islands. Wow, how about that? St. John's. That must have been fun, traveling. You need a passport for that now, don't you?
You do need a passport.
Mm-hmm.
It was quite a miserable process getting one.
Yeah? I have a story about just that, but let me first continue introducing people. Also stopping in special tonight is Lynn.
Hello.
And Lynn, of course, you know a lot about airplanes and flying. And
yeah, a little bit.
Things like that.
Not how to fly them, though.
But you do a lot of it. You do a lot of traveling.
I do travel a lot, yes.
And you're in here. Where did you come from this time?
I came in by train from Philadelphia.
So you're sick of the planes. I don't blame you.
Yeah.
Wow.
Take Amtrak enough, you'll get sick of them, too.
Yeah, that's true. One day, passports will probably be required on those as well.
Well, they do check your ID now.
So now what I heard, and this is kind of unusual, the Bush administration suspended some of its new post-September 11th travel requirements, hoping to placate Congress and irate summer travelers whose vacations have been thwarted by delays in processing their passports. Was your vacation thwarted by delays?
Almost. Yeah. I was under the impression I did not need a passport until the last week when I found out I needed a passport.
Didn't we tell you to your face you needed a passport, not Kevin?
Probably.
Mm-hmm. Didn't listen, did you?
No.
So you got the passport. How did you get a passport so quickly?
I went to the New York City passport office and waited in line for 9 hours.
9 hours?
Yeah, it was just about 9 hours.
What kind of things go on in a 9-hour line?
Not much.
There's not a sort of carnival atmosphere going on or anything like that?
No, it's very quiet. There are enough security guards that, you know, one infraction kicks you out of the building.
Wow. And you actually are online the whole time, or are you sitting in a chair waiting for your number to be called?
More or less both.
Okay. Well, as it turns out, they want to temporarily lift the requirement that U.S. passports be used for citizens flying to the Caribbean and Bermuda. So I guess that would have applied to you, wouldn't it?
It did.
Yeah. The suspension would allow the State Department to catch up with a massive surge in applications. And that's the thing I can't understand. They didn't know this was going to happen, that all these people are going to suddenly start applying? Jim?
I just suddenly it came to me, a thought that disturbs me greatly.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't St. John's in the Virgin Islands American territory?
Yes.
And you needed a passport?
Yes.
I see a very dangerous and disturbing trend.
Well, it's not part of the United States. It's not within the country. They don't vote for...
It's a territory.
It's
still a U.S. protectorate.
I don't know what that means.
You're going from one... Well, it's overseen by the U.S. government.
Uh-huh. So that means they can't do anything unless the government says it's okay.
You can go to Puerto Rico without a passport.
Yeah.
I think it's different.
What about American Samoa? What about Guam?
Yeah, what about Guam? I've always asked that question. What about Guam?
My first girlfriend was from Guam, believe it or not, but that's a long story. I really don't know. I would think that if you need a passport for St. John's and the Virgin Islands, you need one for Guam or American Samoa.
Well,
which is bothersome.
There are all sorts of travel things going on. And of course, a lot of people want to go to the Chaos Communications Camp this summer, taking place over in Germany, which, by the way, happens to be taking place August 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th, and 12th. If I'm not mistaken, that's 5 days.
Wow.
5 days of hacker fun in the sun. And that's not what they're saying. That's what I'm saying. Unless it rains, and it's fun in the rain. It is fun. Have you ever had fun in the rain? It can be a blast.
Fun. I'm just saying it's not the same thing as fun in the sun.
And if you set up your tent right, Mike, it won't get wet.
Well, I've purchased a new tent. Hopefully I won't have that problem.
Anyway, so a lot of people will be traveling over to Germany for that period of time. If you want more information, ccc.de is the website for all that. But it's a blast. Happens once every 4 years, outdoor hacker camp in Germany. But, of course, it means people have to travel over there, and it's tough. It's tough finding cheap airfare. It's tough dealing with all the travel restrictions. I saw this interview in Der Spiegel, which is a German publication, and fortunately for me, it was translated into English. Otherwise, I wouldn't be able to understand what it was saying.
Might have been made in English.
I think it was, because it's an interview with Michael Chertoff, and I don't think he speaks any German. Just to highlight a couple of the most important
Michael
points.
Chertoff is, of course, the Secretary of Homeland Security.
Yeah. Do you think people don't know that?
I don't know.
Do we all know that?
I thought when I saw
be
this.
Be honest.
We all know that, but we have an audience.
Lynn did not know that.
I did not know that.
You're flying around the nation all the time, and you don't know who the Department of Homeland Security.
I put my life in this guy's hands every day, apparently, and I don't know who he is.
Well, here's the interview. Here's part of it. Mr. Secretary, why do you need to know how European citizens traveling to the United States pay for their tickets, or whether they fly in business class or economy, or if they have special meal requests? I find it interesting not a single American journalist has ever asked that question of him, but the answer is this. If we had had a program prior to September 11th, and count the number of times he brings up September 11th, where we were able to get information about how everybody paid for a ticket, including a contact telephone number and a seat number, we would have been able, within a matter of moments, to identify 11 of the 19 hijackers who came into the United States. It was by finding that information after the attacks that we were able to track their pattern of behavior and also identify others who had been part of the plot. Does that make any sense? If they had known the seat number that somebody was sitting in who was legally in this country, they could have prevented September 11th?
Let's do a thought experiment. A plane is just about to crash into the World Trade Center. You know 11 of the 19 people on board. They're all on a terrorist watch list. What can you possibly do with that plane 40 feet away from the windows?
Well, the logic here just doesn't connect for me. I mean, I don't know what he's trying
to say. I'm just demonstrating that the logic doesn't connect.
Yeah. I mean, they were in the country legally. Or if not legally, not by much. A visa might have expired or something like that. But in no way would knowing that what they ate on the way over from Europe or anywhere have helped prevent that.
Now, what's interesting, it doesn't go into this in the article, but we may have mentioned before, is that they don't want to profile people by race or religion. So if you request a special meal based on religion, if you say I want something kosher or halal, the U.S. government does not get that data. If, on the other hand, you, like me, just say to them, no, I just don't want any meat, then apparently the U.S. government has a use for that information.
So you really believe, this is continuing the interview here, so you really believe that the passenger name record, the 34 different types of data you get from every traveler coming from Europe, could help to prevent a new terrorist attack? And this is his response, Michael Chertoff. Imagine that our troops in Afghanistan raided an Al-Qaeda safe house and captured a computer containing the cell phone numbers of operatives in Europe. Wouldn't it be important to know whether one of those cell phone numbers was used to book a transatlantic flight? That, in a nutshell, is why we need the data, so that we could, for example, identify a connection between someone on a flight and someone who we know to be a terrorist. Now, from this, I'm getting, wouldn't it be nice if we just had everything, every single phone number, every single bit of information about every single person, because then we would know more and we'd be able to connect it to different things. But it makes no sense at all to me to believe that these phone numbers that you find someplace are going to be used to do something else. I mean, people do know how to hide their tracks. If they're trying to engage in some kind of criminal conspiracy, odds are they're not going to use the same phone. And if they do, you're going to catch them anyway.
Yeah, it would seem like if you were up to no good, then why would you, A, use the same phone? Even if you were using the same phone, why would you give them the same number or not suppress? I'm assuming that you can suppress your outbound caller ID in Europe. I mean, it doesn't, I mean, if that's great, but these are not honest people that are just moseying along through life. Their intents are bad, and therefore they're going to take steps to make sure they don't get caught in this type of thing.
These are the people most likely to cover their asses, whereas everybody else is just going to get caught in the net and have all their private information bandied about. And then one day, oops, we left it on the website and a million people's personal data got sent all over the world.
Or we lost the hard drive. Oh, wait, yeah. That already happened. Sorry.
But for a year, we'll enroll you in a credit reporting program, and that'll make you happy. The agreement to deliver this kind of data will end on July 31st, and many European countries and the European Union want to drastically reduce the amount of information that is provided to the U.S. Do you see any chance for a compromise? Chertoff says, I prefer to think that we will find a solution. In the end, I think Europeans have to recognize we can never be put in a position where we surrender to another government the determination of who comes into our country. What does that mean? Just by not getting all of this private information that we're basically handing over, we're surrendering to another government, using the word surrender, the determination of who comes into our country. It just sounds so draconian.
Well, he's very good at what he does, Chertoff.
He is, isn't he?
You can read this whole thing. I don't think he really responds to any of the objections that Der Spiegel raises.
So. And Der Spiegel says, you are very optimistic that Europe will accept your conditions. And he responded to that, I want to turn the question around because that's what I do. If we were to stop doing what we are doing because the Europeans object, and then someone came in and we had another September 11th, and I would have to say, well, we surrendered our information because the European authorities didn't want us to use it, what would the American public say? What would the surviving family members say? What would the puppies and kittens of the people who died in a horrendous manner say? What would the unborn children say? All right. Get a hold of yourself, Michael. You caused my relative to die. And then, what would the European privacy authorities say? We're sorry. It's too bad. This is the price you pay. Oh, my God. This guy, he's out of control, isn't he? I mean, I'm imagining this. Okay, continuing here because we don't have too much time to devote to this. But the fear in the U.S. administration seems so widespread that you don't even want to rely solely on the passenger data. In addition, you endorse a sort of online registration every European would have to fill out 48 hours before traveling. And he says, yeah, we proposed to Congress a way that would loosen the visa waiver process and make it more flexible in some respects. This is newspeak right here. This is imposing a new regulation and calling it loosening it up and making it more flexible so that countries in Eastern Europe could participate. At the same time, we want to elevate the security level generally by having what we call an electronic travel authorization. And basically, travelers would register online in advance, and they would therefore know before they arrive in the United States whether there was going to be a problem with them being admitted. Currently, because we don't necessarily know who is coming until right before they leave, it is often the case that someone travels 6 or 8 hours across the Atlantic, that person arrives, and we say, guess what? We are not admitting you. And they do say that, don't they? guess what?
I don't think they're quite so polite.
So it'll mean that every European citizen has to fill out that kind of a form before traveling. But apparently, the way this system, which I really haven't heard anything about.
That's one of the things I found interesting. Apparently, the Spiegel found out about this proposal that I had never heard of.
Yeah. How did they do that?
I don't know.
Those Germans. You don't have to do this for every trip, apparently. You would do it periodically, and it has a shelf life of a few years. So you fill out this form 48 hours before you travel. What if you don't have access to the net? What happens to those people?
There's another flaw with that. If this stuff has a shelf life of a year or two, what if you're like a nice, normal, secular Muslim who really doesn't go to the mosque that often, never been on Hajj, and all of a sudden you get religion?
Yeah, generalizing a little bit there, but people do change.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. So basically, you would only be allowed to travel with this kind of preclearance, and they say that they fully expect this to apply to Americans, too, when they travel overseas.
Well, he doesn't say that he expects it, but he thinks it would be a good thing, and he wouldn't mind filling it out when he travels overseas.
He says, absolutely, it ought to be reciprocal. We are perfectly content to have Europe impose the same basic approach. I think that is fair. It's funny how he's making this decision, and we get no say at all. And as Der Spiegel points out correctly, it will be the end of any kind of last-minute traveling. Oh, boy. It's simply incredible what we're heading towards.
Have you noticed, Emmanuel, that they that when you fly out now, they have, you know, the little kiosks that if you're from another country and you're leaving the United States, you have to scan your passport and have your fingerprint done and all this stuff?
I've seen it, yes.
They have signs on them now that say this program has been terminated. You don't need to do this anymore.
Really?
Makes me wonder what they're doing instead. But, yeah, you would, I guess, if you have a foreign passport.
The U.S. visit program.
The U.S. visit kiosks. They have a little sign on them that says this program has been terminated.
The webcams and the fingerprints, all the time they spend putting that together. Now, you say it doesn't...
Well, this is just the ones when you leave. I don't know about the ones where you come in.
All right.
But the ones where you leave, there's not the... There's little signs on them that say we're not doing this anymore.
Amazing. Okay, staying over in Germany for a moment. The German government has passed a tough new law against hacking. And of course, this is going to be of concern to lots of people over there. As well as people over here who are going over there. The legislation, which the German government proposed earlier last year and approved on Friday with no changes, aims to crack down on the sharp rise in computer attacks in the public and private sectors. Although Germany already has a comprehensive penal law against attacks on IT systems, the new legislation looks to close any remaining loopholes. How do they define hacking? They call it penetrating a computer security system and gaining access to secure data without necessarily stealing data. Offenders are defined as any individual or group that intentionally creates, spreads, or purchases hacker tools designed for illegal purposes. They could face up to 10 years in prison for major offenses. Now, our friends over at the CCC obviously are not very happy about it. Chaos Computer Club spokesman Andy Muller-Magoon, who's been on this program many times, said that safety research can now take place only in an unacceptable legal gray area. CCC is also concerned that the new legislation will make it easier for the police to obtain information by hacking, something that was outlawed by the courts a few months ago. Germany's decision to tighten up the statutes against hacking comes as the EU develops its own framework for dealing with cybercrime. So I imagine this all has to do with coming into step with the rest of Europe. It's kind of sad, kind of scary. All right. Well, enough said about that. What else? Going on overseas. Some things going on overseas which are of note in the technical world. Russia's oldest theater has installed equipment to block mobile phone signals in a desperate attempt to force patrons to stop taking calls during performances. That's according to the TASS news agency. Plays, operas, ballets, and films in Russia are routinely punctuated by the trilling of mobile phones, and many patrons are unashamed about chatting in defiance of terse warnings to turn phones off at the start of the evening. Although the technology is rather expensive, our theater accepted the cost in order to protect the artists from unpleasant surprises, said Alexander Sheparov of St. Petersburg's Alexandrinsky Theater, which was founded in 1756. Get this, one actor had to deal with noises from cell phones the only way he could, saying, turn that stupid phone off and let me finish my soliloquy. So, that's where that stands. Cell phone jammers in Russia.
Hmm.
Who
Who would have thought?
I wonder how they keep it from spreading out beyond the theater.
Yeah. All right. Strangest thing found on Amazon this week. JL-421 Land Cruiser Tank. All you have to do, get this, all you have to do is type in JL-421 into Amazon.com, and you will see, for a price of $19,999.95, a Land Cruiser slash tank that looks like something from outer space. The JL-421 Bandankadank is a complete, unique, extremely rare land vehicle and battle tank. Designed with versatility in mind, the Donk can transport cargo or a crew of five internally or on the roof, and can be piloted from within the armored shell or from an exposed standing position through the hatch thanks to special one-way steel mesh armor windows and a control stick that pivots up and down to allow piloting from the standing or seated position. It's fascinating. There's all kinds of reviews about this. Thomas says, I'll admit it, shopping for a personal tank can be a bit daunting. Many times in the past, I've purchased overpriced so-called battle tanks and driven them into battle, only to be wrecked in 10 minutes by the first blow-off of some insurgent's homemade mortar. But not this baby, no way. And the 400-watt sound system keeps me rocking like a crazy man as I'm dishing out justice commando style. It's simply incredible what you can find, and this is just passed on by a friend. But what's also interesting about this, maybe some of you who understand how Amazon works can explain this to me. Customers who bought items like this also bought the following things. California green seedless grapes, 1 pound for $2.99. Chiquita bananas, 4.5 pounds for $4.09. A Fort Bomb bag, practical joke by Loftus International. Stink bombs, again, practical joke by Loftus International. And it's here, anti-monkey butt powder, anti-friction plus sweat absorber. What in God's name is going on online? That's what I'd like to know.
If you need a personal tank, you tend to be more liberal because most conservatives go into the army to get a tank. So obviously stuff like, you know, the organic fruits and vegetables would be also bought by liberals. It makes perfect sense to me.
There's only two left in stock, so order soon.
Should we go
quickly?
Well, you know, you can just press the buy it now button there, and
we have the 2600 van. I think we should get a 2600 tank.
Where would we park the thing?
Well, the point is this, you know, people have attacked the van. Who's going to mess with the van if the tank is right there?
People don't attack the van. People know better. Let's see. The latest in fear from the Department of Homeland Security, the State Department of Transportation is moving bicycle lockers away from 7 Long Island Railroad stations because of fears they could be used to hide bombs instead of bikes. Now, the important thing to remember in this story is that the fear is coming entirely from within themselves. There has been no threat. They simply sat down one day and said, hey, you know what? What if somebody blew this up? That would be bad. We have to get rid of it now. Acting on a 2005 request from the MTA, the Department of Transportation finally has found alternate locations for the bike lockers are nearby municipal parking lots. That's according to DOT spokeswoman Eileen Peters. Now, the DOT will spend $89,000 demolishing the lockers on Long Island Railroad property and installing newer, sturdier lockers elsewhere. There have not been any known terrorist incidents involving bicycle lockers nationwide. Nevertheless, we are doing our best to address the MTA's concerns. Others said not to bother. I think they're wasting their time, said Jerry Bringman, who is the chairman of the LIRR Commuters Council. I think there are more serious concerns they should be focusing on rather than some bike lockers at remote stations on Long Island. MTA Police Assistant Deputy Chief Kathleen Finneran, commander of the Eastern Region, said lockers near stations and tracks are a security issue. It endangers the customers. Did you know bicycle lockers endanger the customers?
I'll tell you what endangers customers.
What's that?
Cars driving.
Okay, fine, but I don't know how that endangers people waiting on a train.
Well,
platform.
I'm saying if they can't park their bike, they're going to start driving. People die from cars much more often than they die from exploding bike lockers.
They can't park their bike, they're going to start driving instead of taking the... Okay, whatever.
To the train station.
Why don't they take the car to the train station then? That makes more sense.
That's what I'm saying.
Oh, okay.
The people who used to take their bikes, if they can't park their bikes, they'll take their cars.
Anyway, the DOT, which has installed bike lockers for commuters at 15 stations across Long Island, will remove lockers from the Ronkonkoma, Central Islip, Hicksville, Farmingdale, Oakdale, Port Jefferson, and Wantagh stations in a few weeks. MTA has told the DOT they would like bike lockers moved away from 8 other stations, but the MTA has no jurisdiction over those lockers because they're not on LIRR property. And it's just unbelievable. They're 3 feet high, 6 feet long, and basically they free up parking spaces by providing a secure spot for commuters to lock their bikes. and about half of them are currently rented out. Three stations have waiting lists. Jim.
So
I'm familiar with a number of these, and they're made of you can't see through them. That's the supposed problem. So theoretically, somebody could throw in explosives. You could easily make it of some sort of perforated metal so that you could see through them and guard against explosives. Well, a number of these are under awnings, under elevated LRR tracks, and they want to move them to open areas, which would make them less attractive to a bike rider. You know, if you're getting rained on, you don't want to leave your bike in the open. They could just change them into perforated metal lockers and have someone examine them every so often. The security problems will be obviated, and it wouldn't inconvenience any bicyclist.
Well, this is a silly conversation to even be having. It's not our fault to be having it, because this is reality. But what I don't understand is, how is a bicycle locker any different from a car trunk? I mean, if you blow something up in a bicycle locker, could you not do the same thing in a car trunk that's going to replace it?
Yeah, but the car trunk is – a number of these bicycle lockers are under stations that are elevated, like in Hicksville, mm-hmm. or very close to the tracks. The car trunk would not be as close to the tracks, or would not be under the elevated station.
So wait, what you're saying is that there's space underneath the tracks to put the bicycle lockers.
Right.
Would that space not still be there without the bicycle locker
right.
being
you
there?
Right. You could just drive your suicide car bomb
into this area.
Well, you just
leave the
area.
Bomb there.
Well, no, there's no parking right under, but...
You don't have to park to put a bomb someplace.
Well, it's... Well,
you could just put a bomb, I think is what you're saying.
It's been done for centuries, before cars even existed.
Okay.
Ah, oh, boy. All right. On the subject of cars and technology, the number plate system over in England needs to be completely overhauled to beat a rise in car cloning. A record number are being cloned to enable people to commit crime and escape motoring fines. That's according to the Association of Chief Police Officers. More than 40,000 sets of number plates were stolen in 2006, a rise of almost 25%. Now, what they want to do instead of having just plain number plates, which we refer to obviously as license plates, they want to have a system with electronic tags, and they're currently having trials for this kind of thing. And basically, I guess the cars would be tracked. Yeah, they're introducing a standard for theft-resistant number plates, as well as microchip technology to combat cloning. And I suppose if you commit a crime, even if the license plate says something else, the little electronic tag will send out a signal saying who you really are. And this is something that is going to be very difficult to remove.
Theirs are a little different than ours, because I don't believe theirs are made by the government. I could be wrong on that. But theirs are just you get it, and then you're assigned a number plate for your car, and that's the number plate for the car forever and ever and ever, no matter who owns it.
Mm-hmm.
And... So I guess if
you
had
like a VIN,
yeah, like a VIN. But except it's not permanently attached to the car. You know, like a VIN is pretty permanently attached to the car.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that if you had, let's say that you had two Toyota Camrys, and you made two number plates, then how would they really ever know with the way that their system works right now? Because I'm relatively sure the government doesn't make these plates up.
Mm-hmm.
So you could have two cars driving around, and as long as you didn't park them right next to each other, how would you ever know? I mean, it'd be a little harder to counterfeit a license plate here, I think, than it would be there.
Well, I guess it's worth checking into to see.
But I certainly wouldn't want to have RFID in my plate.
I don't think you have a choice, Lynn. I think
it's headed down that direction.
It sure seems that way. GPS is something that is always very interesting and fascinating. And I came upon this ad on the internet. Confirm your suspicions. Want to know the whereabouts of your employee, teenager, husband, or wife? The TE2 GPS vehicle tracking system is designed to be concealed inside of the vehicle, allowing you to record the complete travel activities of your vehicle anywhere, anytime. Why engage in the dangerous practice of following a vehicle when you can quickly and easily let the TE2 do the work for you? And this is really kind of cool. I'm into this sort of technology. But the bad part about this particular device, which can be found at bluewatersecurityprofessionals.com, you have to get inside the car. You have to get inside the car. I want the kind of thing where you walk up to a car, let's say a police car, for instance. I'm curious where they go, hang out, how long they spend on certain blocks, things like that. You know how on television you walk up to a car and you just simply slap something on the underside of it, and all of a sudden they know everything about it. They know where it goes and how long it stops at lights, how many lights it runs through maybe. These ones you have to plug into the cigarette lighter, which means it has to be your car. You have to get access to it. It's not really like following a car.
Wait, so you're putting this in the car. One of their target markets is if you suspect your spouse of cheating. They're not going to notice this, like, object plugged into their cigarette lighter? Is that the claim? It seems a little silly.
Yeah.
Well, you can't put a GPS thing underneath a car. It's got to see the sky.
You know, I asked the people who make The Wire, because I saw it done on that show, and they usually get everything right, and they slapped something underneath the car, and apparently that was able to track the car's movements. Maybe it wasn't GPS. Maybe it was using something else, but I can't imagine what.
You could use RF triangulation to look at something, but that's not going to be nearly as accurate.
The whole point is to know where in the GPS spectrum the car is, but also to not be seen. To not have this device be visible. So hiding it someplace, obviously, is the way the cops do it.
Yeah.
So I'm curious how they do it. They're not breaking into your car and plugging into a cigarette lighter.
And they do it in real life.
Yeah.
Like, this technology does exist.
It does.
Yeah, I mean, I guess they could open up a brake light and put it in there, or a running light and get voltage in there, you know, something like that.
How do the car rental people do it? They have these devices, don't they?
Well, they have the ones that... Yeah, but it's got a little GPS antenna on the trunk lid.
Mm-hmm.
LoJack, I thought, had its own antennas, and you can hide it almost anywhere in the car, and they have antennas that essentially triangulate the position.
Yeah.
So that wouldn't need line of sight to the sky. You just need to be able to pick up their relatively high-powered antenna.
Well, what theirs signals do is they have the LoJack in most cities has the directional finding equipment in police cars. And instead of saying, this is where I am, it's saying, here I am, come find me. And it gives the police a bearing on a little compass wheel inside their car.
Right.
That's all it does. There's a couple of cities where they do triangulation on the West Coast, but not very many.
Well, the TE2 can plug into the cigarette lighter, or it's wired and hidden inside the vehicle and records the complete travel route of the driver. And when the vehicle returns home, the TE2 unit is removed from the vehicle and downloaded into the computer for viewing. Maps of your town, complete with streets, are built into it, conveniently allowing you to record the entire travel route of the vehicle. This is good for parents spying on their kids, want to know where they've gone. It's not good for following somebody that you're curious about their movements.
Now, doesn't the OnStar system, which comes standard in most cars now, already do this?
I believe it does, but that's not a hidden system. That's something that you want, and something that I guess you would be able to point to and say, yeah, there's the receiver that's able to see various satellites or whatever.
Yeah, but there's also another interesting little thing that I actually bought at Dayton, which is a little device that plugs into the OBD port, and it shows speed increases, decreases, braking, and all of this stuff. And, you know, that's the idea there is that you can put that on the car and see how fast somebody's going, but it's not going to tell you where they're going. It just tells you how far they're driving. And I did put one on my wife's car, but I told her before I put it on there.
And your wife is here too.
Yes, she is.
All right. So
lovely wife is over in the corner.
She knew that
she knew in advance, but when we reviewed the data to look at it, she wasn't very happy about that.
Uh-huh.
I don't think.
Interesting. Well, you know, we love to play with these things. We love to play with these bits of technology and figure out how they work and how they can be abused and how they can be broken. That's what it's all about. Okay, more privacy issues. Google's in the news yet again. Now, did you hear about this? It's a big concession that Google has given to the rest of us. They're cutting back the time they hold user identifying data a little bit. They're cutting it back to 18 months from 2 years, which is what they originally said they were going to do in March. Google's Global Privacy Council, Peter Fleischer, announced the revised policy in a June 10th letter addressed to the head of a European Union working group that recently called on Google to justify why it needed to store personally identifiable information for as long as 2 years. After analyzing the working party's concerns, we are announcing a new policy to anonymize our search server logs, say that three times fast, after 18 months rather than the previously established period of 18 to 24 months.
Wait, so...
They didn't answer the question. No, they didn't. Why they need it for 2 years? They said, we don't need it for 2 years. We need it for a year and a half. There, shut up. That's what they said. Yeah, so basically, Kevin Bankston, a staff attorney at the Electronic Frontier Foundation, remains skeptical that forces beyond Google's control mandate the storing of personal data for such a long period. By comparison, he said AOL anonymizes searches after, anyone want to guess? How long?
One year.
A year? Lynn?
3 months.
3 months? Mike?
I don't think they're really smart enough to keep it at all.
Okay, you don't get an answer. Not Kevin.
8 months.
30 days. AOL looks pretty good now, doesn't they? Yeah.
That's scary.
And Bankston says the burden is on Google to demonstrate why they need this data for so long. Considering the much shorter retention periods of competitors like AOL, I don't think they've met that burden. And it's interesting, too, this guy Kevin Bankston, he's been in the news, too. This is the guy that got caught on Google Maps. He was telling people that he had quit smoking, and you could actually see him smoking a cigarette walking down the street in San Francisco. In fact, he was caught twice. He was caught both by Google, and he was caught in the past.
Yahoo's something or another.
A9?
A9, that's it. He was caught by them. Both times, I think he was smoking. So obviously, this guy is a heavy smoker. yeah, these Google Map things are really getting kind of interesting. You're seeing all sorts of funny poses and controversial things.
I have more Google stuff, a different story. Are we done with this one?
No, we're not done. We're just starting this one.
Oh, we are?
Yeah, because Google Maps is a big deal, Jim. It's a big deal. You can see people and you can see inside people's living rooms. You can see people stealing cars.
This one is
not right.
It's Google, what do they call it, Street View or something like that.
Street View.
I mean, it's rather interesting, but I think I actually read that article. One of the things they were talking about is, well, can't you put technology in there to blur the faces out of the people as they're walking down the street? And, you know, I mean, what benefit does being able to see the faces of some random person walking down the street give you for looking at the street in this way? I mean, what I'm looking for when I look at it is, okay, I'm going to walk down the street. What does it look like?
Let's say you're having an affair. Actually, it's probably the worst thing I could say with your wife right here in the room. But I'm saying that the third person you, let's say you're having an affair and you can't even walk down the street without the Google van catching you and somebody reporting you to the people that should. I mean, basically, you have to do everything 100% right. You are under observation at all times. It's George Orwell's fantasy come true. So don't even think about jaywalking or talking to somebody you're not supposed to be talking to, because it could be caught on film and displayed for the whole world to see.
Well, first of all, I'd be proud to have footage of me jaywalking, but
it can be arranged, Mike. It can be careful what you wish for.
All right. I agree with all these arguments, but I'm curious that they were not raised when A9, which is owned by Amazon, was doing it.
Because nobody knew about them. That's why they failed. No, the thing is, Google is doing a very good job at this. They do good jobs at what they do, which scares people. You can look at a no parking sign on Google Maps and to see if you're parked illegally, and you don't have to go downstairs to check. Although I've yet to be able to do that on Google Maps, but people have told me, yes, they can do it. Now, they have some guidelines. They have requirements if you want to get your face off of Google Maps, if it's somehow wound up there. And by the way, I'd also like to appeal to listeners. If you're basically spending your days and nights now playing with Google Maps and driving up and down streets in various parts of the world, send us some very interesting things. I'd like to know the first person to send a picture of a large dog on a street. That's a challenge right there. We'll give you praise next week if you can do that. But maybe some other things too. Jim, do you have something
there? I have an idea. This is a suggestion. This is not yet official. We should give a t-shirt away to the first person who can spot the 2600 van.
Yeah, but the 2600 van is in the compound. I mean, it's not on the street is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, but they could have taken
a picture
of it. You don't
camouflage it anymore?
They could have taken a picture of it when it was parked outside of Hope.
They could have.
I checked. It's not there.
Yeah, it's not there.
It's not in front of the hotel pen.
Yeah.
Just a thought.
So, wait, to be removed, you have to know you're in there.
That's true. And I imagine with all the billions of people who do everything Google tells them to do, someone's going to find it and tell you. at some point. But anyway, let's say you're on there, Mike. Let's say your face is on there and you don't want it there. This is what you have to do. To request removal of your image from Street View, you must demonstrate that you are the person shown in the panorama you would like removed. We will not take action if you are reporting on behalf of someone else, such as a friend, relative, or stranger, except that you may report on behalf of your minor child. To show that you are the person in the image you would like removed, you must provide us with the information specified below. To expedite our ability to process your request, please use the following format on your verification form. 1. Provide your legal name. 2. Provide your email address. 3. Provide the Street View address of the Street View image you would like removed. 4. Include the sworn statement, I declare, under penalty of perjury, that the information in this notification is accurate. 5. Attach a clear, readable copy of a valid photo ID, like a driver's license, national ID card, etc. If you are requesting removal of an image of a location, attach a copy of a document demonstrating your association with that location, such as a business card or letterhead. 6, please email your completed verification form along with the necessary attachment to maps-legal@google.com within 5 days. If you are unable to upload a copy of your photo ID electronically in an email, you may also fax us a copy of your form and photo ID to 650-887-0389. We'll temporarily remove the Street View image pending receipt of your ID verification. If we have not received a copy of your photo ID within 5 days, then we will restore the panorama back to Street View. Please note that we will investigate your complaint and take action as needed. We will not contact you unless we need more information to review your request. And if you see that the panorama was not removed from Street View, it is likely that it did not meet our conditions for permanent removal.
Now, they said at the beginning that you may only apply for removal for yourself, not for a friend or relative or whatever, and except for small children.
Right.
And then one of the requirements is an email address. What if you see your grandparent on there and your grandparent doesn't want to be on there and they don't have an email address? There's no way to...
Then they'll never know they were there anyway because they obviously stay away from the internet and
but
they don't know won't hurt them.
Someone they know could tell them.
You get them a Hotmail account, you borrow their photo ID and photocopy it, and you pretend to be them.
Yeah, let's get somebody off Street View who doesn't want to be taken off Street View by simply faking their ID.
Yeah, and you email them a photo ID, you could totally Photoshop.
Well, I mean, the face isn't going to be that recognizable. It's just a little dot on the screen. So you could just say, yeah, I'm this person. I'm outraged. You took a picture of me walking down the street. And lo and behold, they got to send the Google van over there again. And the person gets wiped away as if they never existed.
But now you've committed perjury.
What kind of crime have I committed exactly? A crime against Google is what I've done.
How are you committing perjury if you're not in court?
Because I declare under penalty of perjury that the information on this notification is accurate.
You're filing a false instrument in some jurisdictions.
Over interstate lines using email.
Yeah.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah. Very serious, Lynn. Very serious.
Very serious.
But yeah, you got to jump through all kinds of hoops to get removed from Street View. It's going to be a pain in the ass for people that find themselves on there that don't want to be. So just stay off the streets. That's my advice. They can't go into your homes, not yet.
Walk down the street with a hat on and sunglasses. And
you know, Google is also a terror risk.
A terror risk?
Yeah. Okay. New York State Assemblyman Mike Gianaris has written the head of Google saying that they should blur the detailed satellite images of skyscrapers, airports, and all potential terror targets through Google Earth and Google Maps. And he justifies this by saying that the Trinidadian terror suspects with the JFK airport plot used Google Maps and Google Earth to help plan the plot.
Yeah, and you know what they would have used? They didn't have access to Google old picture books. Is this guy going to blur images on those too?
Well, we should. We really should.
What have I done? All right, Jim, you also brought this little advertisement in, which I find to be very interesting. It reads, German citizenship EU passport. Children and grandchildren of German Jews deprived of citizenship by the Nazi regime, you may be eligible for German citizenship and European passport. Is that true?
I really don't know. I don't qualify, so I just thought that possibly someone here did.
All right. Well, the Friedman Law Group, the German Citizenship Project, is running this. Friedman is spelled Friedman, and that's all the advertising we're going to give for them. But it's interesting if you can get a passport for a different country based on history of genocide or something like that.
Yeah, you should be able to get something out of it if your grandparents or great-grandparents had to flee.
Yeah.
You know, speaking of politicians and taking on Google, there's another politician that's taking on websites. U.S. Representative Anthony Weiner is furious with sights that out cops, undercover agents, informants, witnesses, and I presume federal law enforcement agents. Mm-hmm. And it's a shame Bernie isn't on. We could warn him about this. There are a number of sites that do that, and he thinks it's a bad idea.
Our phone number is 212-209-2900, and I'd like to see a flurry of calls come in. We'll go to the phones as soon as they light up. And I mean that. When I see a full bank of phones, we're going to go, because we don't want to get the same people that call every week, and some people say things that don't make any sense.
Couldn't be.
Yeah, it does happen. So I know they're out there. We have about three calls on the line so far. We have room for about 10. So 212-209-2900. A little rant for me about iTunes. You know what happened to me not too long ago, a couple of weeks ago? One of my hard drives failed. It happened to be the hard drive that has all of my music on it. Now, fortunately, I kept it backup, so I was okay. But the backup was a couple of months old. So that meant that all the music that I had put on there in the last couple of months, I had to re-encode from the CD that I had bought. Mm-hmm. Now, what about the music that I had downloaded from the iTunes store, which I didn't do because I don't believe in it, and I've never downloaded anything from the iTunes store? Had I done that, what would I have done?
Bought it again.
I would have to buy it again. And that, my friends, that's why you shouldn't be paying the same amount for something you buy online than for something you have in your hands. It's different. It's not the same thing. I can't think of a better example as to why this is true than if you lose it. Now, they say, oh, make sure you make a copy of it. Well, I did make a copy of it. It was on my computer. Now, was I supposed to make another copy? They restrict how many copies you're supposed to make in the first place. But basically, there's a limit to how quickly you can make copies and where you can keep them all. And if you get something downloaded and your hard drive fails a week later, then you're kind of out of luck. Unless you have the CD, then you can simply re-encode it again. So something to keep in mind when you pay 99 cents for every single song. 212-209-2900. We're about halfway there. So let's get five more calls coming in, then we'll go to the phones. OTH@2600.com is our email address. We like to get letters from our listeners.
Yeah, I was just going to say, send us an email. It'll be fun.
Yeah, it always is. Dear Off the Hook, one of the reasons you need to give your Social Security number to a school to get a federal loan is because of Executive Order 9397, November 22nd, 1943, which requires that any person doing business with the federal government must furnish a Social Security number or tax identification number. Most likely the reason or reason you need to use it in other situations also, signed ICON. So thanks for that gloomy bit of information. Dear Off the Hook, my son will be leaving for Paris shortly, and when he uses his cell phone in Europe, it cost him a lot of money. Do you know of something he could avail himself of so he can make calls to the USA? Is a prepaid phone card the only option? Thanks, signed Sandy. P.S. My husband listens to your show all the time and loves it. Does that mean you don't? Now, Mike, I know you found something interesting that people can use overseas. You want to tell us something about that service?
Yeah, I found something called Global SIM Card, which is something you put in your phone if you have an unlocked GSM phone, and it's a UK number on the Isle of Man, whatever that is, and you can go anywhere in Europe and receive phone calls for free. The person calling you has to pay to call the UK, but that's not that expensive.
Well, from so. Here, that's do we charge extra to call a mobile phone in England? I think we do.
Yeah.
But how much would that come to in a decent long-distance plan?
I don't know about the Isle of Man, but I think it's like anywhere from 35 to 60 cents a minute.
That much?
Yeah, it's pretty expensive to call a European PIN number. I mean, even with the voice over IP stuff where you get it a little cheaper.
Okay, but basically, you're walking around. How is this different than the Liechtenstein deal where you have a Liechtenstein SIM?
It's pretty similar, but it's very expensive to call Liechtenstein.
Mm-hmm. Even more expensive than 35 to 60 cents a minute.
Oh, yeah, we were paying like $1, $1.50 a minute. So.
Okay. So from Liechtenstein to the Isle of Man.
Yeah.
All right. At some point, we're going to find a way to make free phone calls and keep it that way.
Although if you're only visiting one country, the better bet is to get a SIM card from that one country.
Right,
And do that.
And is there a particular company or website that you can direct us to for this? Or should people search for something in?
It was called Global SIM Card. It's obviously a UK company, and I'm sure it's in Google.
Okay. What's the outbound? Do you know?
Yeah, if you want to call the United States from overseas,
if you're roaming in another country.
It was pretty reasonable. It was, I think, 50 cents a minute.
That's pretty good. It's normally well over a euro.
Yeah, it was certainly.
Or a pound.
It was certainly more reasonable than many other services.
And of course, text messaging is where people really waste a lot of money. So wow. Hopefully that's a bit more reasonable too. Okay, 212-209-2900. We have pretty much a full switchboard, so let's go to it. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook. You know, you're just too noisy. I'm sorry. See, this is why we insist on a whole lot of calls. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook. This is also why, because our phone system keeps moving around and we have to sort of play hopscotch to catch up to it. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook. Speak up, please. Okay, the other part, again, I have to mention this. When you call us, you got to speak. You don't just call us and listen to us talking to you and trying to get you to say something. All right? I think we've covered everything now. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Hello?
Yes. Yes, you. Go ahead. Okay, you know, I don't know what's going on out there, but you see now why I said a full switchboard. We've gone through 5 calls so far and have yet to speak to a human being. I don't know what it is. Something in the air. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Yes, good evening.
Hi, how are you? Welcome.
Hello?
Yes, can you hear us?
Hello?
Oh, no, they can't hear us for some reason. Okay,
hello?
Well, you know, I don't know why they wouldn't be able to hear us.
That might explain why we had 5 people go through. And
maybe, but I'm going to try one more. It'd be kind of ironic because every single line is lit if they can't hear us. Hello, can you hear us? No, you can't hear us.
Wow, you're so almost on the air.
Guess we're not going to be taking phone calls tonight because they can't hear us for some reason.
That's kind of strange.
Button to press, maybe? That button has to be pressed. Ah, I never pressed that button in my life. Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Yes, I can hear you very well.
And that's the 6th problem, all right? The same person calling all the time. All right. Apologies to all the people that we yelled at just now. This was what we were trying to protect you from. Now let's go over here. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Yes. Good evening.
Were you the same caller?
Well, I was on. Yeah. You missed me. I couldn't hear you. Listen.
Yeah. Sorry about that.
Some phone fun. I keep getting an 800 number on my cell phone. I don't answer it, of course. And finally, I called it yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
They identify themselves as Wells Fargo Auto Finance. The first thing they do when you get a human is ask for your Social Security number. Well, you know, I turned this into an interesting, you know, exercise and expletives and things like that. And I told them, I said, don't call anymore because I'm tired of this, you know. They keep calling. So today I called them up, found out they're in North Dakota, and, you know, went into the expletive thing again, and they stayed on the phone. This guy's threatening me. I said, come on out to New York City, kick my butt, you know. So anyway, if you would like the phone number so everybody can join in this fun, because these people are fishing for people's Social Security numbers.
It's an 800 number.
Yes, and if you call in, they're gonna grab your address and everything else. First thing they ask for is Social Security number.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it would be a public service to give this number out.
And does anybody have George W. Bush's Social Security number handy?
Well,
no. What's wrong with you people? Oh, we should always have this number. That's what I use to fill out all sorts of forms.
So do you want this 800 number?
All right, give us the 800 number for Wells Fargo.
Yes, 800-565-2310.
And these people are the telemarketers that call over and over again.
Yeah.
And they call your cell phone. That's really annoying.
Yeah, it is. So, you know, I mean, I never call, you know, if I don't know who's calling my cell because, you know, it's set up, you know, I don't give my number out, you know. But anyway, now, by the way, in terms of international calling, I have found that, I have my card says MCI, but I think it's Sprint now. The reloadable card, they have gotten so cheap now, you know, to offer some kind of service, you know, against the cells. It is dirt cheap, and normally if I call Europe, they just double charge me units, in some cases triple charge, and that's all. And it's really cheap because it's down around 15, it's less than 15 cents a minute, per unit, I mean. Usually a minute, you know. So if I call the UK, they charge me 2 units, you know, per minute, 30 cents. So that's I don't know. That might be the way to go, you know, with that.
Okay.
Now, in terms of the issue with passports, when I used to go down to the Caribbean all the time, you never needed a passport to go anywhere, but you need a passport to come back into the continental United States. That's what you need a passport for.
Now, not Kevin. Did you have to show your passport to get back in?
Yes, I did.
Uh-huh.
You don't need it to go there. You don't need it to go to any of the islands. But you need it to get back in. People forget that the only valid ID, and I used to carry, if you're not white, back in the 60s, 70s, even in the 80s, if you didn't have a passport on you outside of this area,
they
a driver's license is only a permit to drive a car in the state it's issued. It's actually not even valid outside the state, but it is accepted, right? They never have to accept it if they don't want to.
Mm-hmm.
In the 60s, myself and another person from here was in a car from Georgia with the driver and a friend of his. We got stopped in North Brunswick, New Jersey. They tore up his paper. You know, back in the day, you know, your driver's license and stuff was paper, right?
Right, and no picture on it.
They tore it all up, held us at gunpoint, refused to accept, you know, my driver's license and my other friend's driver's license as valid till 9 in the morning. And, in fact, they can still do that. So, you know, the point is that if you don't have a passport and you're not white, they can play games with you. I've seen this happen. I saw, coming back from the islands, I saw a family who was not black. They didn't have passports. They accepted their driver's license because their child had no identification. They refused to allow the child back into the country.
So they had to leave the child there on the border, huh?
That's right.
Wow.
And so now, who knows what's going on? Because my passport got stolen a couple of years ago, and it's too much trouble to replace it. How much did it cost you for your passport, for your new passport?
$152.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, that's with all the expediting fees and all that kind of stuff. Listen, sir, thanks for the very interesting call and all the facts and things like that. We do want to move on to a few others, but a lot to think about here. Let's see who we can fit in the last few moments of the show. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Hello.
How you doing?
I have items about two things, the MTA thing and also the Google thing.
Okay, make it quick.
Okay.
And turn down your radio, too.
All right.
You'll get confused.
I was using headphones, so.
Oh, okay. That'll confuse you even more.
The first, I'm on now?
Yeah, you really have to hurry, though.
Okay, first, on the MTA, if you go to some stations like Babylon on Long Island,
right,
you can park handicapped cars right under the tracks.
Oh, dear.
And you can pack employee cars under the tracks.
Uh-huh.
And since they had that ex-employee from Kennedy who got arrested,
right?
You know, you got to be suspicious of employees too,
and handicapped people.
Yep, and you don't even have to be handicapped.
No, of course not.
To get to the handicapped, you could just drive there, and you're under the tracks.
That's right. Now, what's your point on Google?
Google is using images for commercial purposes.
Mm-hmm.
It's a long-held thing that you own the use of your own image.
Okay.
You know, it's over a century ago they determined that. You know, a commercial company can't use an image of you to sell something.
Interesting. And they're selling their service, I suppose.
And they're advertising. That's, you know what I mean?
Yeah, good point. All right. Thanks for calling and making that point, because it is one that needs to be made. And I'm sure it's going to be a point in the future when so many of us find ourselves on camera someplace we don't want to be. That's our show for tonight. I want to thank everybody for calling in. Sorry for the confusion before. And we'll be back again next week for another edition of Off the Hook. Have a good night.
Oh, we could talk mythology, the emperor's economy. We'll start all over again. We could chew the bubblegum or turn the television on. Don't try to tell me who I am. You're not my Uncle Sam. And don't try to tell me what to say, 'cause I don't give a damn. Information liberty. Yes, we've come to take you there. Information liberty. Go tell the button, jump up and down, get my money to a tramp in the street. Oh, I just wanna live today and speak my mind in any way. Is that too much to ask? No, don't try to tell me who I am. You're not my Uncle Sam. And don't try to tell me what to say, 'cause I don't give a damn. Information. Tell the world to the enemy square.
right. You're listening to WBAI. That's right. That was Off the Hook. Who is that?
Sham 69.
Sham 69. Wow. They know how to really, really take yourself out.